It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the 615 Sessions podcast on this Friday afternoon. Hope everybody is having a great Friday afternoon. Why wouldn't you be? Mike Herndon is here with us. You can read the words that he writes for paulkaharski.com. You can hear him on the Football and Other F-Words podcast with our buddy Zach Lyons. What has the discourse been on the podcast in the last, I don't know, month and a half? What's the level of sanity that you two are keeping about your situation?
Relatively sane, I think. It's all relative with that show anyways. But lots of discourse about the coaching, new coaching staff and everything like that, of course. And then, we've kind of started to devolve into some of the player acquisition stuff. And we went entirely too long this week on free agency. And we started arguing, you know, he's anti-Hollywood Brown, I'm pro-Hollywood Brown. So, like, the battle lines are being drawn for what will eventually turn into the next 6-7 weeks worth of podcast content for us. So
battle lines being drawn on a podcast is always a plus as far as I'm concerned. In fact, that's the reason that the only reason that I regret doing as much solo stuff as I do is just because I don't have the opportunity to fight with that many people on a regular basis, except for Lucas, who exists to fight with me. But Mike is here because, well, I wanted to have you on, Mike, because I saw you having an interesting discourse about the level of education that fans actually want about their football teams. And I thought it was a very interesting discussion. Now, this also happens to be the day that the NFL salary cap has been announced at $255.4 million, an increase of $30 million year over year. They are very, very happy in the league to have Jeff Bezos's money, and they are injecting it right back into all the teams' salary caps. So why don't we start there with Combine Around the Corner? Well, quickly, 615 Sessions podcast presented by Two Rivers Ford and Relax the Back, relaxtheback.com for all of your back-related needs. If you're having problems sleeping, if you need a new office chair, if you need a standing desk like I've got, Relax the Back has you covered. So salary cap implications. First, were you surprised by the figure? Because the latest reporting that I had seen around it and talking to teams, I don't think anybody expected anything north of 242, really.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised because, yeah, that was kind of the number that had been lingering out there for really months now. And then there was a little bit of rumbling last week, I think, that, or maybe it was earlier this week, that I guess PFT was getting some sources that were saying maybe closer to 250. But even that sounded like it would still be south of 250, not 5 million north of 250. So, yeah, right. I think it's certainly surprising that it's that much higher. And frankly, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing for the Titans specifically.
Well, so expand on that, because there's a couple of reasons that jumps into my mind. One, market inflation for all positions, including running backs. So the idea of a cost-effective Derrick Henry solution becomes less and less probable in a scenario like that. But the other thing that came to mind, Mike, is the ownership group and cash on hand. And just because the salary cap goes up does not guarantee. And listen, it's not like, you know, Amy Adams Strunk and the Titans ownership group are outright hurting for cash, though they are spreading it pretty thin across a couple of different ventures, a new stadium, perhaps, you know, paying off the bills from a new wing on the practice facility beyond just what you would owe coaches like Mike Vrabel and John Robinson, who you're still paying to get off your books, who you'd be very happy to see get jobs. And that does not appear to be happening for either of those gentlemen in the near future. But beyond that, is there a concern that jumped into your mind when you saw that figure?
Yeah, the first thing that jumps into my mind is obviously the Titans are going to be a team that has cap space this year. They were already projected, I think it was around $65 million before when we were working off of the 242 number. But now that we're at 255, they're up at $78 million. And that's great and all. And the number being bigger makes everyone think, oh, well, they can just go sign more players. That's not really going to be how it works, though, because that number raises for all teams, and the teams at the very top that have the most money, it really helps the least, because the teams that are in cap hell down at the bottom, you know, there had been before Buffalo, the new numbers. Yeah, there had been 10 teams that were in negative cap space that were going to have to do things to make it work, to get their number down, to restructure, do all the things that we know you can do to manipulate the cap to get under that 242 number. Well, now three of those teams are already out of the negative. They're out of the red. And everyone at the bottom has now 12 to 15 more dollars or 12 to 15 more million dollars to work with here. So you're looking at more teams that can go after bigger players, you know. So your top of the market guys are going to have a few more teams that may be able to bid on their services that otherwise would not have been able to be in playing in that market just because they have an extra, you know, basically a whole player salary, right? Like a good player salary to work with. So I think you're going to just see more bidding, more competition for all these guys. And the Titans have a lot of work to do in free agency. They have a lot of money, but they have a lot of holes to fill. And so they're going to need to get some of these impact guys.
Yeah. I mean, you try not to urinate on their hopes, Mike, because the cap space and the high draft picks and things like that this year, like those are legitimate assets and can very quickly. I mean, the Texans, a great example. The league has teams that go from worst to first all the time. And the Titans, you know, if they play their cards right in free agency and the draft, are very, very capable, even though the AFC South is as congested, we'll call it, as it's ever been, or at least in recent memory. And the Titans do still have, you know, the idea of no state income tax, as Brandon brings up in the YouTube chat. That's still an asset for the state of Tennessee and the states of Florida and things of that nature. But still, Mike's concerns are not unwarranted because it just brings more bidders into the marketplace. And also, you know, you mentioned teams having basically a good player salary now at their disposal where they might not have had that wiggle room otherwise. It kind of changes the definition of what a good player salary is. You brought up Hollywood Brown. My guy, you know, spot track valuations are basically like looking at Zillow. I know they drive homeowners crazy, but, you know, at least it gives you a little bit of a gauge before the bidding actually begins. If Spotrac had Hollywood at $14.5 million on an average annual basis, we're talking about a $20 million wide receiver right now, and that's for a dude coming off a career worst year.
Yeah, and I think specifically with Hollywood, not to get into my soapbox on him.
Come on in with it. That's fine. I'll do soapbox.
If you look at the last, I think he's played, you know, the last 3 years, he's played, I think, a total of 22 games with what I would consider like a real quarterback, Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray. I'm throwing out all the games with Colt McCoy and Trace McSorley and Josh Dobbs. I'm sorry, Vols fans. I'm throwing all those games out. But if you look at when he's had a real quarterback, the last 22 games, that 22 game sample, he's on a pace of like 1,155 yards and 7 touchdowns on a per year, like on a 17 game season basis, which is very good. I mean, I think he's been hurt a lot by the fact that he's played with a bunch of trash cans at quarterback, frankly, over the last 3 seasons. Because remember, Lamar got hurt a little bit during that 2021 season too. He didn't finish the year. They had, Tyler Huntley or someone like that.
Pro Bowler Tyler Huntley. You put respect on his damn name, Michael.
Sorry, Snoop Huntley, Pro Bowl quarterback. My apologies. But you know, you there's some of that that's in there with his numbers and everything like that, that I think you have to look at and take into context. But yeah, your point about his salary and what he's going to be able to command, it's going to go up. Yeah. I mean, everyone, rising tide raises all ships. Right. So I think that's going to kind of be what happens in this free agency. Everyone's going to have their hand out for a little bit more, knowing that everyone's got more cap space now.
Oh, including the running backs, because I see some comments about paying Derrick Henry now that, you know, I think people, you know, it's not an unfair assumption to make. It's not their job to pay attention to this stuff the way that it is ours on a regular basis. But seeing more cap space makes people, as we talked about at the start of the podcast, think that you just have more to spend. And that's inherently inaccurate based on how this situation is going to go. Caleb Gray says, I love that hat Mike is wearing. I'm going to ask him to defend his fellow Mavericks fans who had a confrontation with Kevin Durant probably by the end of the podcast, because I've also noticed his team apparel. So we will get to that momentarily. But to your point, Mike, I had Joe Corey, the former NFL agent, on the radio show in the noon hour today, within, you know, 10 minutes of the salary cap information coming down. So it was good timing. I wonder how I'll play this clip for you, and I wonder how it lands on you. This from a former NFL agent now doing work for CBS Sports.
It's been set in the league an unprecedented jump of $30 million year over year for each club to have at their disposal. Your reaction?
Yeah, I didn't see it coming in that high because the preliminary projections were between 240 and 245. That was because you still were dealing with paying back money from the pandemic year when the salary cap ended up dropping. So we're back to normal. 255.4 is a game changer for some teams, particularly ones like the Saints, who have a credit card approach to the salary cap where they push today's cap obligations consistently into tomorrow. And it also helps the Chiefs if they want to franchise Chris Jones for $32.16 million because they have about $12 million more cap room to play with than they had otherwise.
So as an agent, how does this change the approach? You've mentioned a couple of different scenarios, and there's going to be unrestricted free agents, there'll be franchise tag candidates and things of the like, so it's not one size fits all as far as a game plan here, but beyond just asking for more money, how does that change an agent's thinking?
Well, it could expand the pool of teams that you're looking at for your respective free agents, because a team which you were thinking may not have interest with this type of cap room, you go, well, maybe they are interested. Or you maybe had a guy who you thought would be a salary cap casualty. Maybe he's safe now because they don't necessarily need to cut him. Or maybe he goes from a guy they would never consider having take a pay cut to one where he is a pay cut candidate. Also, all the franchise tag numbers are going to go up because they're based on their percentage of the cap. So all those numbers, which were projected at one point using a $200, $245 million salary cap, are going to go up as well. I haven't redone the calculations, but, yeah, it affects everything across the board.
So how do you view the salary?
Okay, it's just more me rambling. And that's kind of what the stuff that we covered, but also the salary, the franchise tag figures, Mike, where that's going to see a spike in the franchise tag numbers. You know, it makes the T. Higgins discussion, I think, a little more interesting. I don't know how realistic that was. I know that Kaharski wrote about it at the website this week, that he, you know, kind of poking and prodding a little bit at the viability of a trade. But to hear that from the agent's mouth, you know that everybody's going to be walking around with hands out asking for more, please. Sir, can I have another?
That's right. Yeah, no, I think that his point about, you know, teams that may not have been able to shop for that player now coming into the market is kind of the biggest thing as it relates to the Titans. But then, you know, on the T. Higgins front, I think I struggled to see a scenario where the Bengals let him walk for nothing, right? Like, I think they're going to end up tagging him. I think they're going to have to, because I'm sure he's going to be, you know, if they didn't think his contract ask was that great before, I'm sure it's even worse now.
Wide receivers, Mike, making $35 million a year when Ja'Marr Chase gets around to getting paid. Imagine having AJ for 25 a year.
Oh my God.
In today's market, I'm sorry to do it to you, but like, just that for context, that how much more affordable Jeff Simmons looks now, how much more affordable the AJ contract would have looked now. Like, just those things for context for the audience.
Exactly. It happens all the time, right? Like, you see the number every time someone signs, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they gave that guy that much money. And then 2 years later, it's like, oh, that's a bargain. You know, look at what this guy's getting paid. It consistently happens. And so, yeah, the Titans are probably going to spend, you know, overpay for some guys in free agency. And we're going to say, oh my gosh, what a overpay for this dude. And then in a couple years, if he plays well, it'll be a steal. And then a couple years, if he doesn't play well, he won't be here anymore. So it's kind of one of those things, you know, you pay the market price and you try to find the guys that are going to be good. But as it relates to Higgins, I think he's going to be tagged. I think you're going to have to trade something for him. And I do agree with PK that they should not be in the business of trading away premium draft capital right now. If you were a team that was like a player away or just needed a few pieces here and there, sure, go for it. Go get a guy that's proven, that's a known commodity, is young, all that stuff. But my problem with this team is they whiffed on three consecutive drafts, basically. Yeah. 2020 to 2022, almost got nothing out of that. You know, 2023, we'll see. There's some promising guys in there maybe. But this team is so starved for young talent on rookie contracts that I just don't see how you can come away from this draft with just one pick in the top 100. I just don't see how you could do it. It just, you know, that's what they need more than anything are young homegrown stars, because that's where your superstars come from. Even T. Higgins, who I think is a very, very good player, I don't think he's a superstar. I don't think he's an A.J. Brown-level player. I think he's probably about where he is now. He's a really good second receiver and probably not a ideal number one guy. Like, he's probably, you know, 15 to 20th best receiver in the league, somewhere in that range, which is fine. It's good. But to pay not only a draft pick, but also a premium free agent contract for that, I just don't see the urgency for it. Like, with A.J. Brown, the Eagles got a top five receiver, right? Like, I mean, that's the thing.
It helped propel a Super Bowl run. Like, that's right. There's so many things that may not have been possible in Philadelphia as a result of the A.J. Brown trade that were made possible immediately when you have that collection of skill position players and a quarterback on a cost-effective contract, the way that this team is now trying to build up, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look, I mean, because so many people say, well, look at what Tyreek did for Tua. Look at what, you know, AJ did for Hurts. I completely agree. Like, having an elite receiver makes a huge deal. I just don't think T. Higgins is an elite receiver. And I don't think Brandon Ayuk is either, for that matter. I think Ayuk is better than Higgins. He gets talked about a lot less because his coach isn't, his former offensive coordinator isn't now the coach of the team. I think Ayuk is a better option than Higgins if you had to choose one, but I really don't think they should be pursuing either one. If it comes down to a trade, if they somehow end up on the free agent market, sure, go for it. But I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah. The complication you wouldn't take back the third round pick because you got Will Levis out of it. And that, you know, that's the most viable thing that you have moving forward, but that further just kind of complicates the discussion that probably makes it a less viable option. The idea, though, Mike, that the Titans don't really have cap casualties as teams start to clear cap, is there any part of you that fears that they might try and salvage Andre Dillard with Bill Callahan because they don't have to get rid of him?
God, I hope not. They've got to get rid of that dude. I think Bill
get
Callahan
him out.
He's the closest thing there is to a miracle worker, but he's not going to make a guy who I just think, and this isn't to like say anything necessarily personally negative about Andre Dillard. I don't know the man at all. He just seems like he's not mentally cut out to play offensive line in the NFL. Like, I think he's a little bit on the soft side. I don't think he just doesn't come across, and he doesn't play with an edge to him like I think your good offensive linemen do. And I just don't think Bill Callahan, for as great a coach he is, I think he can improve guys tremendously from a technical standpoint, you know, teach them new techniques, make them better, get an offensive line working as a unit quickly. I just don't think he's going to be able to make him a dog. He's like not a dog. That's just what it comes down to.
He's a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy.
He's a nice guy.
Stunned by Myles Garrett. It's one of the most, I've never gotten a quote like that in my life, Mike, when I'm sitting in that Browns locker room asking Andre Dillard, do you kind of relish those opportunities to go up against guys like Myles Garrett? And he just looks at me and goes, yeah. In fact, he told me all the different ways that he beat me in that game. And I was very appreciative. I was like, oh, okay, little guy, that's how this is going to be. Get on out of here. You sweet, sweet, terrible, terrible left tackle. This is just...
Callahan needs to be spending his time with Dylan Raidens, Nicholas Petit-Frere, and Jalen Duncan, and the guys that are younger and still have like a potential to get there, right? Like, and I do think he can make a difference for those guys.
Well, and if you can find some kind of a viable solution, like some of these guys are going to have to play, whether it's Raidens, whether it's NPF, obviously Skoronski, like, and Duncan, I don't really know what that is quite yet. I don't think TBD.
He's the furthest away.
Yeah, for sure. To put it gently. But, if you can get a viable starting option out of one of these guys, if you can improve Nicholas Petit-Frere's inability to stop an inside pass rush move, if you can find ways to get Dylan Raidens to play with lower pad level and play with more strength, and frankly, to just get him in a proper strength and conditioning program, because that's not something that they've made a hire at as we sit here doing the podcast on Friday. At about 3:50 p.m. Central Time, there's still an open position for a head strength and conditioning coach for the Titans staff. That's going to be an interesting discussion whenever that hire gets made. But of all the different position groups that I hope that they try and salvage stuff, I'm not as like hung up on the idea of trying to save Treylon Burks or trying to save Kyle Phillips, because I don't trust those dudes as far as I can throw them. The offensive line, if you can try and further improve something while adding top-end talent, whether that's in the first round or the second round of this upcoming NFL draft at left tackle, at the interior positions, whatever, and just have something other than Skoronski that you know that you got to lean on in 2024, I think that can make all the difference in the world, because we know that this isn't a one-off season fix. I think everybody's pretty realistic about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Bill Callahan can do a lot, but he does require talent, right? I mean, I went back a couple weeks ago for my article on Paul's site and looked at Bill Callahan.
You should read everything that Mike writes. That's right. Make sure you plug it. It's not like I don't say the man's name enough around here, for God's sake.
But it was, you know, I looked at all of the all pros and you know, everything that Callahan has. And to his credit, at each of his stops, each of his last four offensive line coaching stops, he has had at least multiple Pro Bowlers on every single one, like multiple Pro Bowlers in the same season, every single stop that he's made. And with the Cowboys, you know, he obviously had Tyron Smith and Zach Martin and Travis Frederick. The Jets, he had DeMarcus Ferguson. He had Nick Mangold and Alan Faneca, I believe, all at the same time. And then Washington, you know, he's done it every single time he's gone to a team. And he can do it relatively quickly. But most of those guys that he made all pros were first round picks, right? Like they were, I think, 11 of the 13 all pro, Pro Bowl type guys that he had in those situations were first round picks. So you do need talented offensive linemen, and he can build, he doesn't need five first round picks across the front, right? Like, but he needs a couple in there that can be your building blocks. And then I think he can get everyone else up to a level that, you know, you kind of hide their weaknesses and you can use your studs to, you know. All right. So one of the things that I harped on forever last season, you can't have two bad tackles. So like, get a stud tackle. You can slide everything else to the other side and you can trust this guy to win on an island, even against the good pass rushers, even against the Miles Garrett, like TJ Watts, whatever. So they've got to get one tackle spot solidified. I think they've got to go get a center who can really play in this experience. Like, I don't think you need to, you know, have a rookie center and a rookie tackle flanking your second year left guard, right? Like, go get an experienced player that you can plug in there, whether it's Andre James or Lloyd Cushenberry or you know, Biadius, you know, whoever you want. But go get somebody who can plug in there and play right away. And I think those are the two spots. If you can solidify those, then yeah, maybe you can get something out of Raidens or MPF or you know, whoever among the young offensive linemen that can take Callahan's teachings and actually, you know, take steps forward to becoming a passable starter.
Speaking of teaching, we're going to get to that here in just a second, though I do want to point out quickly that Mike Garofalo is tweeting out that A.J. Brown is calling into Philadelphia sports talk radio shows today. He called into their afternoon drive show to bat down some rumors, confirm he wants to stay with the Eagles, clarify any sideline flare-ups. It could have been me, Mike. It could have been me. I could have been getting calls from A.J. Brown on a car phone. It could have been me. It makes me so salty.
I know
he's just so dramatic, but God, the whole experience, it's delightful to follow from afar. I'm sure that you're happy to not have, I don't know if you're not happy to have the headache or whatever the case may be.
Oh, I would gladly take the headache. Give me the headache if you're going to give that kind of production. I mean, like, I just don't even care if the guy's a little bit of a diva. You know, whatever, you know, like, if you can catch the ball and make plays like he does, you can call into as many afternoon radio shows as you want, buddy.
I've never in my life been jealous of Ike Reese until just now. What can you do? So to the point of education, we are getting ready to enter not just a different kind of Titans football, but I think a different way in discussing Titans football. At least I'm hopeful about that. And, you know, that's something that I've got to adjust to based on how I'm delivering, you know, how I'm delivering or setting the level of discourse on talk radio the same way that you guys do with the podcast and how you write. But going through, I went through the Cook Index. I'm not sure. Are you familiar?
I'm not.
So the Cook Index, I'll try my best because I tried this on the radio the other day and then all of a sudden I got hit in the face with, I'm not talking about math with my football. Get out of here. But basically the Cook Index is something that True Media has been using to chart the rate of first and second down passes within the first 28 minutes of a game before time and game situation dictate further tendencies. So basically everything before the first, before the 2 minute warning and how teams are managing that. The Bengals had the fifth highest first and second down passing rate out of teams in that situation. I think I've got a video playing in the background. Do you hear that in the background? Was that just me? Okay, that's weird. I don't know what that is. Anyway, so the Bengals had the fifth highest rate. The Titans were 32nd. Now, the 49ers were 31st, so it doesn't mean that passing more on first and second down before the two-minute warning makes you immediately a better offense. But I started to get into that and then immediately just got hit in the face with, we don't want to, don't tell me anything about an index in football. Talk to me about sports. Tell me where the coach screwed up. And then let me yell about it. And I know you had a similar experience this week on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, you know, really it was that JJ Redick clip that kind of went around where he mentioned, you know, he had done a video, I think, breaking down like Zion Williamson, point offense versus, you know, when he's playing off the ball. And he did a lot of analytical breakdown. I mean, he's great at talking about that stuff. If you're an NBA fan, like JJ's amazing. His podcast is great. Go watch it. But
the old, you know, he no free shout outs, but you know.
That's right. And so he said that, you know, got like 54,000 hits or something like that. And then he did a take about, you know, ripping a coach or something like that. And it got over 1 million views on that.
Doc Rivers, like, lack of accountability.
That's right. So, and I've experienced the exact same thing. And I remembered, 2017, I think it was, when I was writing at Music City Miracles, I did a full, like, all 22 tape breakdown of Jayon Brown's rookie year. Why I was excited about his potential, to step into a bigger role moving forward. And I mean, this thing was long. If you followed my work,
I remember reading it. It was very, very thorough. I felt as educated about inside linebacker play as anything else in my life at that point.
I get deep into the weeds, right? So like I spent literally days working on this thing, was really proud of it. Happy with how it went. It got like, you know, I could see the page view numbers on SB Nation, and it was like maybe 800 page views after a couple of days. And I was like, yeah, not terrible, but that's not very good for like an average article over there. And then I did a Kevin Dodd post. You know, he had got tagged with the did not report to camp designation. And I was like, you know, that needs to be the final straw. And I went and wrote about it and basically wrote an opinion piece just saying, the Titans need to move on from him. I know he was a second round pick. I know he's only, 2 years into his career, but they need to be done with this guy. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to fit the culture that they want to build, all this stuff. It gets 10,000 page views within 24 hours. And I'm like, I spent maybe 30 to 45 minutes writing that because it was just my opinion. I didn't have to look anything up. I mean, I might have put a few nuggets in there just because I almost feel bad about posting anything without like putting any facts on there that someone can learn. But I did that, and I'm like sitting there going like, what is the point? Like, why am I doing all this stuff? You know, spending all my time trying to build in. I think there's a real question as far as like how people actually want to consume sports, because I think some people, and I think the majority of people fall into this bucket, I think just want to be entertained and they want to talk about, you know, whatever the hot take is with their friends. They want to have the MVP debate. They want to have the GOAT debate. They want to talk about what I would consider like the candy stuff of like basically programming First Take. Is what they want.
It was ESPN's scourge for the longest, and now it's their highest rated program during daytime television.
Yeah, I mean, and it does well for a reason, because they talk about the things that people like to hear people talk about and argue about and all this stuff. So I think there's a big group that just want to be entertained, don't really care if I learn anything new. Don't really care if you are even right with your content, as long as you are entertaining me, I'm happy. And that's fine. Like, I'm not going to shame anyone for like that. Like, to me, like, sports are the toy box of life, and you can take that in however you want to. But at the same time, it is very disappointing as like a content creator sometime, where it's like, I can put in a lot of work and do something I feel really is good content that educates a fan base or that teaches them something that they wouldn't have otherwise known. Because I feel like everyone else, like you can look at, you know, a football game and write or you know, tell your buddies about what you thought the quarterback did or didn't do or whatever. But like to actually go in and watch the film and do all the other and try to find the nuance that is behind however that play is happening, I think it's better content at the end of the day, but it doesn't get appreciated by as many people. And I will say that the people that do appreciate it are extremely loyal, and they will follow you and they will pay money for your content. And I'm greatly appreciative of them because like they are the reason that I am even like a part of like even a tangential part of the media today. So I think, you know, I am very appreciative of that group of people, but unfortunately they are not the majority. And I think it informs what kind of media you get, right? Like, because you're going to get what the advertisers want. You're going to get what, you know, the people who pay the bills basically want. And the people who pay the bills aren't necessarily worried about, like, Jayon Brown film breakdowns. They want to know how many clicks that got, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they don't give a shit. So it's just kind of one of those things that, for me personally, is a little disappointing to see happen in real time. But I also understand it. Like, it's a business, and it's just kind of a, I don't know, it's one of those things.
Yes, as some speaking of now, I won't pretend to speak on behalf of the company, but I will speak on behalf of the company being built upon a mountain of clicks. That's how A to Z exists 100%. And it's a fight that I used to have because I used to be like you, Mike. I used to try really, really hard on the things. Not that I don't try hard on those kind of things, but that it's boiled down to basically a headline and then what we do with people on the primetime show or on the podcast or on your articles. Once we get them in there, it's incumbent upon us or you and everybody else who's producing content to do the heavy lifting of trying to get those more important messages across. But you have to have the damn headline to get them in there. And that is something that Zach Bingham has hammered into my head over and over and over again to the point where I'm tired of fighting it. I'm tired of fighting it. And I just let the waves of clicks wash over me in ways that make me feel a little bit dirty, but it's okay.
And it's the reality of the business. I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with taking advantage of what advertisers will pay for. I mean, you have, at the end of the day, you have to build a business, right? Like, you can be Pollyanna-ish about, you know, the content or whatever all you want, but that may not necessarily drive the business side of things. So I just thought, like, whenever I saw JJ post that, and I was like, man, that, like, just resonated so much with my soul as someone who has struggled against this fight for, you know, what, 7-8 years now. And yeah, so it was just one keep of those fighting, things that stood out to me.
Just keep fighting. That's all I can say. We appreciate your time. At Mike Herndon NFL is where you can follow him. PaulKaharsky.com is where you should pay to read what he's writing because it is good. It is smart. It is better. And that's why it exists behind the paywall. And we're grateful for the way that Mike still is out there Don Quixote style trying to educate and inform the masses even after being beat down over and over and over again.
Just Mike, flailing at windmills out here.
Oh, brother, I'm telling you. we appreciate the time, buddy.